If you've been here with us over the past several weeks, you may remember that we've been looking together at the words of King Solomon in Proverbs chapter 4. So we've had kind of a three-part series based on Proverbs 4. We've covered the first two already. 2 weeks ago, you may remember, we had the backwards sermon where we started with point number 3 and moved our way up. So we started with the benefits of wisdom. Then we looked at where we get wisdom. It's often passed along from generation to generation. And then we closed with the command that came at the beginning of that passage that we are to get wisdom. And so it is an intentional quest. If we're told to get it, then it's something that we can do. It is something that is something we can accomplish. We need to be actively pursuing it. And then we closed with some practical applications. Last week, we looked at the fact that Proverbs is a very practical book, and we learned that once we get wisdom, we have to stay on the path. And that involves making some choices as we go through this life, and making those good decisions and staying on the right way no matter what. We learn that life is full of choices. Many times there is a clear choice between the way of wisdom and the path of wickedness. The way of wisdom leads to freedom. The path of wickedness leads to destruction. And there are many who will try to influence us to go down that path. We learn that both paths are progressive. That is, we made a contrast between a sunrise and a sunset. With a sunrise, it gets brighter and brighter, and that's the way of wisdom. It gets more and more clarity as we go through life, but in contrast to that, the way of wickedness gets darker and darker until we just wander off into darkness completely. And we closed last Sunday with the words of Jesus and his reminder in Matthew 7 to enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter through it. For the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it. Well, this morning we come to the last paragraph in Proverbs chapter 4. So I hope you're in Proverbs 4 by now, but this is a reminder from King Solomon that we are to guard the heart. We are to protect the heart. As we live this life, we are to protect the heart. This is a little bit distracting, isn't it? That's distracting to me. It was a little bit creepy having this going in my office this week. So I'll turn that off in just a moment. But the animation up here was made by someone known online as Doc Jana, who is apparently a medical doctor in India who likes to dabble in animation. And so this came from the internet. It could be an 8-year-old in Russia, or who knows who made this. But I appreciate the work that went into it, but his website explains that he is a believer in God. He's a medical doctor. He loves to create animations of various parts of human anatomy, and then he puts those online and makes those available at no cost to anybody who may be interested in sharing those. The human heart is one of the most amazing parts of the human body. It was designed by God to pump blood continually from about 5 weeks after the point of conception, continuing uninterrupted for a lifetime. And I say lifetime because if it ever stops, that is your lifetime. And so your heart will pump blood for a lifetime, no matter how long that is. Normally, the heart will beat continually, unaided, and uninterrupted for many decades. The human heart is about the size of a fist. It weighs less than a pound. It pumps around 115,000 times every day to circulate the equivalent of 2,000 gallons of blood through the human body on a daily basis. The average human heart will beat nearly 3 billion times in a lifetime, usually somewhere between 60 to 80 beats per minute. Most of us understand how important it is to take care of the heart. We don't always do what we know that we should do in order to take care of the human heart, but most of us understand what we should be doing. We know the importance of getting exercise and eating the right foods. We know the dangers posed by smoking and by a sedentary lifestyle. And I know it's very easy for us to say smoking's bad, and it is. We understand that. But so is sitting in a chair. You know, not moving is also very bad for the human heart. So there are a lot of things that we can do or not do to try to make this organ last a little bit longer. Most of us get our blood tested on a regular basis, don't we? We don't necessarily enjoy that, but we get poked and they check it and they, you know, look at it and they say, well, you need to be doing this or this instead of what you're currently doing. So we adjust our behavior to try to keep the heart running as long as possible. This week, for example, I ate some freshly roasted walnuts. I'm not a fan of walnuts. The doctor said, you need to be eating more walnuts. And so I'm like, okay, I can do that. And so more avocados, more walnuts, that kind of thing may help us out for a little bit. In the last paragraph in Proverbs 4, though, King Solomon is not talking about the literal human heart. As we know, the heart is often used as a picture of who we are. It's a summary of us. And today we might compare it to the mind. So the heart or the mind, it is the seat of emotion. And it is used this way at least 75 times in the book of Proverbs. And we'll refer to it in the same way today. We often today speak of the heart symbolically. This is not new to us in our culture. When we use a heart emoji, we are not usually referring to the muscle that pumps blood 1,000 times a day through the human body. And by the way, when I refer to us using a heart emoji, I'm not referring to myself personally. If you ever see me using a heart emoji, that is my secret signal letting you know that I've been taken hostage somewhere. That's not what I do. But somebody, though, may use that. But the point is, the heart is often used as a picture. To picture something symbolically, to illustrate something. And that is, the heart represents who we are. And in just a moment, we're going to see King Solomon then tell his sons to guard, to protect, or keep their hearts, depending on your translation. And he's telling them to protect who they are on the inside. This is vital. We need to protect who we are. We need to be good spiritually. We understand soldiers and cops will often wear some kind of protection over the heart, won't they? And what they do literally, King Solomon is telling his sons to do spiritually. They are to protect the heart, protect who you are spiritually. Why is it so important to protect the heart spiritually? In just a moment, we'll notice down in verse 23, King Solomon gives the reason. He says, "Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life." And so the idea is the heart is the source of life. And he compares the heart to a spring of water. We think about the importance of keeping our water supply clean. Here in Madison, we are blessed with some very good water. And I'm thankful for the good water that we have here. We go up to Bible camp. They've got some terrible water in Eau Claire. And we have good water here in Madison. But there are some exceptions. I think right now, at least one of our municipal wells here on the east side is shut down due to some contamination from many years ago. And so if I have bad water coming into my home from a source outside the house, it doesn't do any good for me to mess with the plumbing. You know, changing a faucet doesn't fix that because it's plugged into a source that's inadequate or is contaminated in some way. So we need to fix the source. And King Solomon here is saying that the heart is that source. It is this spring of water in a sense. And so if our lives are filled with evil behavior, we need to look at where that behavior is coming from. Jeremiah the prophet said in Jeremiah 17:9, "The heart is more deceitful than all else and is desperately sick. Who can understand it?" And so King Solomon then, he's about to warn his sons, "You, my sons, need to be extremely careful to protect the source and make sure that the spring of water, so to speak, does not get contaminated." I know I've mentioned before, I think of my years that I spent developing film and printing photographs in the dark room. As I've mentioned, I can safely say that I spent much of my college career in the dark, literally. But very early on, I learned a valuable lesson in the lab and science class, something that applied in the dark room, absolutely. And that is, when dealing with chemicals, you never contaminate the source. And a lot of you understand that. If I need this chemical, then I need some procedures in place to make sure that the label on the container accurately matches what is actually in that container. And so I can't be introducing contaminants into it. I can't just grab some crusty old scoop off the counter and dip into the source and contaminate what is there. So I need to protect the source. And that's what King Solomon is saying about the heart. Protect it like you would protect your drinking water, and protect it to keep that clean. About a year ago, you know, I go out to see my sister in Washington. We went to the Ho Rainforest, and there was a river washed it out the time before, so we finally got to go this time, and we crossed a river out there in the rainforest that was so incredibly clear, and she mentioned, with her doing a lot of hiking, she's like, "I got my water filter on me, but that water is so clear, I think I might actually just drink it. It doesn't even need to be filtered." Anyway, we kept hiking, and then we came back, And as we were crossing that stream again, we looked, and there was a huge Roosevelt elk standing in the river just upstream. And we were taking pictures of it and just admiring this marvelous creature. And right at this moment, that elk took a huge dump right in the river. And I looked at my sister and I said, "Yeah?" You know? And she's like, "Nope, never again. I don't care how clean that water looks. I'm not doing it." And so I guess we're talking about, you know, keeping the source clean and having clean water. That's what came to my mind this morning. So with this in mind, let's look together at Proverbs 4, 20 through 27. These are the words of King Solomon about protecting the heart. And let's notice the advice that he gives. Proverbs 4, 20 through 27. "My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your sight. Keep them in the midst of your heart. For they are life to those who find them and health to all their body. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. Put away from you a deceitful mouth and put devious speech far from you. Let your eyes look directly ahead, and let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. Watch the path of your feet, and all your ways will be established. Do not turn to the right nor to the left. Turn your foot from evil." By the way, I'm so thankful that Stuart led the prayer this morning and asked God that I'd be able to deliver a lesson this morning that we would be able to take to heart. Very good wording this morning. So that's what we're studying. So we come to the end of Proverbs 4. We're looking at King Solomon's advice to his sons, telling them, protect your hearts. I want us to notice how he uses four other parts of the body in this passage to illustrate this. So he makes it so simple. He's talking to his sons, and he goes through some parts of the body to illustrate this. So we start in verse 20. And notice that he refers to the ears. "My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings." And I know we've already looked at this idea of listening a time or two over the past 2 weeks. But Solomon repeats it here at the end. And so if he repeats it, we need to hear it again also. So King Solomon wants his sons to listen. Pay attention to his words. And as we've learned, to incline our ear, that Hebrew word means we stretch out or we bend or we tilt our heads so that we can hear a little bit better. And so he's asking his sons, he's commanding them, telling them, you need to pay attention. And so to guard our hearts, we pay attention. We listen to the inspired word of God. It's not just getting information, though. We're not just memorizing facts out of the Bible for the purpose of passing a test, but we listen for the purpose of protecting the heart. So we take what we learn, we allow it to change us. We ask God for wisdom, we search the scriptures, we look at other passages and how they come to bear, and then we adjust our thinking. And we change our behavior for the better. We think about our own children. Or maybe for those who do not have children, we think about any other close relationship. How do we know when somebody is listening to us? And they teach classes in nonverbal communication and in counseling, for example. And they'll give you techniques to give the impression or make people comfortable that you're listening to them. And a lot of times it's mimicking behavior. And so if you're leaned over, if that person's leaned over, you can do what they're doing. If they're leaned back in the chair, you can do something similar. And there's something about that. I don't know. That's an indication that you're connecting or you're listening to them. I don't know. That seems kind of weird to me. But as they research that, these are some things that they found. But when it gets down to it, how do we know somebody's listening to us? If we ask them to do something, it's when they actually follow through and they do it. And that's true of our children. It's true in a close relationship. If we have a problem or something's going on, we ask for somebody to adjust their behavior. We know they're listening when they do whatever it is that we're asking them to do. And so the point here is it starts with the ears. It starts with listening. We hear what God is saying. And protecting the heart means that we listen to God. James explains, we receive the word of God implanted, which is able to save our souls. And then we prove ourselves doers of the word and not merely hearers who delude themselves. So it starts with the ears. It starts with listening. As we continue on, let's skip down now to verse 24. And we find now a reference to the mouth. Put away from you a deceitful mouth and put devious speech far from you. The problem with what we say is that we say what we think. That makes sense? The problem with what comes out is that we're just saying what's in our mind or in our heart. And so if we're speaking crooked, deceitful, devious words, if I speak profanity all the time, or if I let a word slip out when I shouldn't, you know, where are those words coming from? It's not a mouth problem. You know, it's based on my mind or my heart. Those words come from the heart. So we have a heart issue. If I'm constantly putting people down, if I'm always lying or exaggerating what I've done, if I'm always hurting people with the things that I say, if I'm gossiping, if I'm always whining and complaining about my life, if I'm always critical of the people around me, that's a heart issue. It's not really a mouth issue. This is a symptom of a deeper problem. And so if I want to know someone, how someone's heart is doing, I just need to listen to what they say. So that goes both ways. I can judge my own heart based on what comes out, and I can also judge the hearts of others based on what comes out of their mouth. It seems that Jesus alluded to this proverb. He didn't really quote it directly, but he alludes to it as he speaks with the Pharisees in Matthew chapter 12. Some of your Bibles may have a little footnote or a cross-reference leading over to Matthew chapter 12, but Matthew tells us that Jesus knew their thoughts. Wouldn't that be awesome to be in an argument with somebody and you could read their mind? That's what Jesus was doing. He knew what they were thinking before they said it. He knew it. And then he says to these Pharisees in Matthew 12:33, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For the tree is known by its fruit. You brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak what is good? For the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. The good man brings out of his good treasure what is good, and the evil man brings out of his evil treasure what is evil. But I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they shall give an accounting for it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. Our words are very important. Our words reflect what's going on in here. We know we absorb a lot of what happens in the world around us, don't we? We live in this world. We're surrounded by people who don't talk the way that we should be thinking, you know, and we hear a lot of things, and a lot of times that evil in the world comes to the surface in our hearts, and it comes out in what we actually say, in the words even that we as God's people speak. And I think that's why Solomon warns his sons, as they take over as king someday, they're going to be in some weird and some bad situations. They're going to interact with some evil people. And he's saying, you young men, you need to guard your hearts. And the easiest way to see how the heart is doing spiritually is to listen to what comes out of the mouth. And so today, we also need to pay attention to the warning. We protect the heart by putting an end to this deceitful and devious speech. Notice in verse 25, we come to the next bit of inspired advice. King Solomon tells his sons to watch their eyes. Let your eyes look directly ahead, and let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. In other words, as some of us sang when we were little, oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. I remember singing that when I was a kid. I'm assuming some of you did as well. But we are to be careful what we look at. We need to be careful what we pay attention to, what fills our minds, what we're absorbing through the eyes. The research regularly tells us that the information we get through our eyes has far more of an impact on us than just about anything else. That's why we use bulletin boards and pictures. That's why we have a projector up here, correct? I mean, we learn visually, and so we need to hear the Word of God. We also need to see it. We need to see it illustrated. In fact, I would bet if I were to call you on Thursday and ask you what in the world last Sunday's lesson about, you may remember the beating heart up here. I mean, that's my reference. I mean, that was something that would stick in my mind. So we learn visually. And what we see has an impact on us. And so Solomon is saying then, we need to be careful what we allow into the heart through our eyes. We need to be careful where we look. Being careful that we don't allow what we see to pollute our hearts. That we don't contaminate the source through the things that we see. Not long ago, we referred to King David on the roof of his palace, looking down at a woman bathing, if you remember that. And Hans read the psalm for us in the aftermath of that. But on the palace rooftop, he looked down, he saw this woman bathing, he liked what he saw. Apparently that glance turned into a stare, he made plans, he followed through with those plans. He even ended up murdering the woman's husband in the cover-up that followed. But of course that process started with what he saw. King David could have looked away. And obviously, in hindsight, he should have looked away. We think of Jesus' warning in Matthew 5. You've heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. I know it's so easy to justify certain behaviors, and it's easy to tell ourselves, oh, it was just a look, it was just a quick glance, nobody got hurt by what I did, she shouldn't have been wearing whatever it was she was wearing, and vice versa, any of that. But sometimes I think we need to ask ourselves, if that look was not a look of lust, then what in the world was it? We need to look back at the words of Christ and keep ourselves in mind here and be very careful what we look at. And look away and move on. Ask for forgiveness if it's needed. And remember what the Lord goes on to say in the very next verse. If your right eye makes you stumble, tear it out and throw it from you. For it is better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. Solomon was a wise man writing from many years of experience. And his advice to his young sons was, let your eyes look directly ahead and let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. So it's not an eye problem. Ultimately, it's a heart problem. So protect the heart. And we need to be very careful what we look at. And then in the last two verses, notice we come back pretty close to where we left off last week. And that is, to protect the heart, we must also be very careful with our feet. And we see this in verses 26 and 27. Watch the path of your feet, and all your ways will be established. Do not turn to the right nor to the left. Turn your foot from evil. When Solomon tells his sons to watch the path of their feet, he uses a word that refers to weighing your options. Weighing your options. We discussed last week, it's the idea of coming to a fork in the path and weighing the choice. Where do I need to go? I need outside information. I need a map. I need judgment. I need advice from somebody who's been here before, but I weigh that and I make that decision. We understand often a terrible fall where we're injured does not usually start out with a huge leap in the wrong direction. I'm thinking of the times I've been injured falling. It's not because I was jumping off of a building or something. It was going down the stairs, you know, or walking on the sidewalk in the winter. And it was one small step that threw me for a loop or whatever. And I think many of you can understand and say the same thing. And so the same is true spiritually. As we walk through this life, we need to be very careful to weigh the path of our feet. We are to watch or ponder, as some translations have it. Earlier this week, some of us watched the GoPro footage from a hiker out in Hawaii who lost her footing at the top of a waterfall. I don't know if any of you, it happened a few years ago, but just was released this week. She fell more than 50 feet down a cliff. And absolutely terrifying watching what she went through. She lived through it, but just barely. And I think maybe broke a few ribs, collapsed a lung, and almost didn't make it. But it started with one tiny step. So here's this woman. I think she was like a professional volleyball player or something. You know, so physical ability to walk was not the issue. But she just took one little step, and it was wet, and there was some moss or something there, and just slipped, and that was it. And so spiritually speaking, we protect the heart by being careful where we step and making sure we're going in the right direction, turning away from evil, not just going with the crowd, but paying attention. I mentioned in our Wednesday class when it happened, but a couple of years ago, I dropped our son off for an exam, I think it was, on the UW campus one night, and I just followed the line on the GPS to get back home, and that was my mistake. I was driving north somewhere near the top of Bascom Hill. You can picture that, Bascom Hill, and I'm going north to get home. That's the direction that I was going, and I was getting some funny looks from the pedestrians around me. They were kind of parting like the, you know, Red Sea, and you know the statue of Abraham Lincoln at the top of Bascom Hill? Yeah, Lincoln looking out, and you know Bascom Hall? Yeah, I was driving between Bascom Hall and the statue of, the statue of Abraham. I don't think you're supposed to drive there. And I don't know how I got there, but by the time I exited onto Observatory Drive, I'm like, this is clearly a sidewalk. You know, this is, but I don't remember entering the sidewalk, so I still don't know what happened. I was looking at it again on Google Maps last night, and I don't even know what happened there. But it's so easy to get off track, isn't it? And I can't blame that on my hands. You know, my hands, they just guided me to this place or whatever. You know, we got to be careful where we go and pay attention. And when that happens, we can't blame anybody but ourselves. And so spiritually, it's not a foot problem. It's a heart problem. We got to watch out where we're going, and we protect the heart by being careful where we go and watching carefully the paths that we choose to take. As we come to the end of this chapter, especially as we think about guarding the heart, I want us to remember that King Solomon absolutely failed to take his own advice here. He did not do this. He told his sons to do this, but he personally totally blew it when it came to protecting his heart. I want us to close with a few passages, but the first one here from 1 Kings chapter 11. I'll just read it briefly. But keep in mind and listen carefully for the references to King Solomon's heart, the man who gave this advice we've been reading. Now, King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women, from the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the sons of Israel, "You shall not associate with them, nor shall they associate with you, for they will surely turn your heart away after their gods." Solomon held fast to these in love. He had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned his heart away. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away after other gods, and his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. Now the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods, but he did not observe what the Lord had commanded. So notice there, King Solomon's heart turned away from God because King Solomon allowed his heart to be contaminated and polluted by the things that he brought into his life. And so he married these foreign pagan women in direct opposition to exactly what God had said. And these women turned his heart away. And so we have King Solomon as an example. Instead of opening our hearts to the world, instead of filling our hearts with trash, I believe we can take his advice. We are to fill our hearts with what's good. So we can be careful what we hear. We can be careful what we see. We can be careful what we say, and also be careful where we go. If I want to protect the source of my heart, I cannot allow it to get polluted by the nastiness and the poison and the pollution that this world has to offer. And like in the lab, I can't contaminate the source. And like the spring, you know, that I'm drinking from, I got to make sure that that water is pure, because whatever the heart concentrates on, the ears will hear, the eyes will see, the mouth will speak, and that is exactly where the feet will go. So what do we do if our heart has been corrupted? That's why we're here. That's why I'm here. We need an answer to what we do when we're lost and when we mess up and when we sin. What do we do if our heart, like King Solomon's heart, has been turned away from God? We come to God with the attitude that King David had in our scripture reading this morning in Psalm 51:10. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Today we make that appeal to God in the act of baptism. In fact, in 1 Peter chapter 3:21, Peter refers to the act of baptism as an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so by calling out to God in the act of baptism, we are calling on him for salvation. This is the calling on the name of the Lord, referred to by Peter in Acts chapter 2. In response to that message, you may remember that 3,000 people that very day turned away from sin, and they responded with obedience to the gospel message by being baptized, that is, immersed in water for the forgiveness of their sins. If we can help you take that step, we want to know about it, and we'd love nothing more than to help you with that decision. If we can help you study further, if you've got some questions, something we need to look at, we'd be glad to open the Bible together and look at it, you know, side by side or across the table. If there's something we can pray about, if you're struggling with a heart issue, something you're having a hard time with, we hope you'll let us know as we sing this next song. Let's all stand and sing.